Hi, I'm Alex DeBoer, the Current Affairs Coordinator at CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC on the unceded territory of the Tsleil-Waututh-speaking Musqueam people. You're about to hear an interview I did with Robin Perrell, the editorial director of Daily Extra. Daily Extra is Canada's leading LGBTQ media organization and was founded in 1971 to advance the struggle for queer rights and sexual liberation. I sat down with Robin in Extra's Vancouver office to discuss her thoughts on the state of Canada's queer media, both locally and nationally. Our conversation was inspired by a CanadaLand panel interview done by Jesse Brown on the same topic. My interview with Robin focuses on the changing relationship between Vancouver's queer community and the police, how Extra's mandate to serve its readers continues to evolve, and the role of privilege in remaining non-political.
Hi, I'm Robin Perrell. I'm the editorial director of Extra, Canada's queer news source. And a bit about my background, I've been here at Extra since 2001, because I am that old. And so I started as the staff reporter here in August 2001. I'm approaching an anniversary here. And I was staff reporter for several years. And then in January 2005, I had the honor of becoming the managing editor, and so learned new layers to serve the community that we're here to serve. And then I became editorial director of Extra across Canada just over a year ago.
Cool. That's awesome. And so you've been with Extra for 16 years,
yeah.
And both as a reporter and as an editor. So are there any kind of key shifts you've seen in, like, queer coverage that Extra does in that time frame?
There have been so many shifts in the 16 years I've been here. I mean, first of all, shifts on the medium side. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started, we were in print mm-hmm. every 2 weeks. And I look back at that now and think about the luxury of having 2 weeks to prepare all our coverage. So technologically speaking, the shifts have been in the way in which we publish our stories, because over that period of time, of course, we started publishing online. And initially that was as almost a repository of what was in print. So we would put everything in print and then put it all online afterwards.
Yeah.
And slowly the way in which journalists, at least at legacy media and media accustomed to being in print anyway, not that I think we're legacy media, mm-hmm. but journalists learn to use the internet more effectively to cover things quickly, to share the news faster so that our community could be quickly informed and hopefully inspired to take part in discussions as they emerged, and to cover news that is relevant to our communities, to our LGBT lived realities. You know, you want to jump on that right away. You want us to be able to be informed and participate in society as you know, agents of our own lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so has Extra always had the two papers, like in Toronto and Vancouver?
And Ottawa.
Oh, okay. So there's three.
There were three.
Okay.
There were three when we were in print.
Mm-hmm.
And Extra in Toronto being the original.
Right.
The almost original. The original was The Body Politic, which Pink Triangle Press launched in 1971, which was Canada's first gay liberation magazine. And over the years, as the way in which we told stories shifted, The Body Politic wrapped up, also drained by some court cases that accused the editors of indecency and other similar charges, because back then it was not so easy to tell queer stories. Anyway, so The Body Politic and its creators survived and came through and continued to tell our community stories, and slowly gave way to Extra, which was a new way of telling our stories and a new way of capturing our community's realities. And Extra emerged in 1984, and then Extra West, as we were called when we launched here, started in 1993 in Vancouver, and Capital Extra launched in Ottawa also in 1993. And we continued to serve our communities in print until 2015, and then moved entirely online 2 years ago.
Is Extra always a publication you wanted to work for when you were beginning as a journalist?
It was a dream job. I couldn't believe it when I got it. I wanted to be a journalist. I've wanted to be a journalist since I was 16. And I knew I wanted to tell stories that mattered. And I knew I wanted to hold governments and other organizations and people accountable. And I got that chance here to tell stories that actually reflected my world and my life and my lived reality. And to capture our community has been an honor for 16 years.
Is there any piece that you've written while at Extra that stands out to you as something you're most proud of?
That's a tough question.
Yeah,
I mean, 16 years.
Maybe a couple.
Well, I'm particularly proud of a couple of pieces that we ran in the last year. Now, I wasn't the author on this. One of our freelancers, Layla Cameron, did an excellent job looking at Trinity Western University and really going in and going on campus to find out, amid all the discussion about whether or not this Christian evangelical university should have a law school and what that law school might teach and how that might affect LGBT people across Canada. And we wanted to go on campus and stop assuming that we knew how the students felt there. We wanted to find queer students currently enrolled and ask them directly what it's like. And, you know, are some of the assumptions we're making about what would be taught at this Christian Evangelical University, are those assumptions fair? And it took, it was a piece 7 months in the making. And first we found grads, queer grads, who were willing to share their stories on the record, which took courage. And then slowly, Layla, one of our freelancers, found currently enrolled queer students, not many of them, two agreed to share their stories with us. And we got a first-hand look. And as they put it, the atmosphere that exists and permeates the campus life seems to be one of shame around sexuality and queer sexuality in particular. And that shame, it seems like it's suffocating. Although there are students resisting and pushing back and carving space anyway, which I think is amazing. But anyway, so we went onto campus to find out what it's really like. And then we can make some more informed opinions about whether or not Trinity Western should have a law school. So that's the kind of journalism that I think we're here to do, to ask the questions that others aren't asking, to ask tough questions of Christian evangelical universities, for example, of our own community, of our own community organizations. We're here to ask those questions and hold ourselves and others accountable and celebrate our lives and create space so that we can live fully and unapologetically as our full selves, including our sexual selves. We're here to set love free.
Yeah. That piece sounds amazing, and I very much look forward to reading it.
One of the most amazing things about it, mm-hmm. if I can just add, was that we got feedback afterwards from other queer grads saying, wow, you've captured my experience. Thank you. And, you know,
what makes a wonderful feeling, right?
Right? What makes a journalist's heart sing more than to hear that we've captured accurately someone's story?
Totally. That sounds amazing. So, as you know, I was hoping to talk about Pride a bit. I just wanted to bring up a quote I read in that opinion piece I brought up before by Cecily Bell Blaine. She wrote in June, "The argument for maintaining police presence in Pride parades is inclusion, yet when black, queer, and trans folks take their rightful place in those same parades or host their own cop-free Pride events, suddenly we are divisive." So I was wondering about this kind of pervading idea that Black Lives Matter and other sort of like progressive trans-inclusive groups are creating a sort of disruption of queer solidarity. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
I think the concept, the way it's framed as a disruption, is a disservice to all of us in the community, because this is a discussion that's essential. And I personally think that we should all be appreciating the members of Black Lives Matter who put themselves out there to share their stories and to open our eyes to the fact that the community that we celebrate is not inclusive in the way I think a lot of us had the privilege to believe it was. And so for me, anyway, I'll speak for myself. For me, the last year has been deeply eye-opening and humbling in a way that I appreciate very much. You know, here at Extra, we strive to reflect the community and to celebrate our lives. And I look back and realize that as editor, I accidentally, with no intention to do so, but nonetheless, that's no excuse, only represented some queer lives. And to realize that, I deeply regret that. And, you know, with intention, I fully am committed to doing better now going forward. And so I've been reaching out to many of our community members and asking for the chance to share their stories the way I should have all along. And many have been so open to that discussion and generous in the sharing of their stories. And I'm very grateful for that, because to me, that enriches our community. And that brings us closer to the kind of accurate representation of who we actually are in all of our beautiful diversity. I don't think we can celebrate our community fully until all of our community members are included in the picture. And I think the discussion started, I shouldn't say started, that discussion has absolutely taken place for many, many years. But Black Lives Matter, I think, is a catalyst to the discussion moving forward. And I should have been listening long ago. But I thank them for giving me the opportunity and the very well-warranted shove to listen now. So to me, it's not the least bit divisive. It's an opportunity that we should all welcome to move towards a more accurate and genuinely inclusive representation of who we are as a community.
And with the beginnings of Extra with Body Politique and just Extra in the 80s and 90s and to today, has queer coverage been historically less focused on people of color and like trans people? Or so is that, has that always been a struggle that's been going on for certain marginalized groups to have more of a voice within the queer media?
I would say queer people of color have had to fight too hard to see themselves reflected and to hear their voices, and I regret that. They should never have had to fight this hard to have their voices centered and included in queer media that is their, we're here to tell queer stories. Mm-hmm. And their stories are just as queer, and I am fully committed to centering their voices now. Mm-hmm. But I fully admit that that hasn't always been the case, but very deliberate now in reaching out, and I've had the privilege of publishing far more stories recently that give us all a chance to hear more of our lives.
Yeah, and Cecily Bell Blaine, is she a regular contributor?
Yeah, they're a regular contributor. They're a co-founder of Black Lives Matter Vancouver, and they're an author and a poet, and they've been writing for us consistently since, I want to say December 2016. It's November or December.
It's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the reasonings for why there's maybe less queer media today than in the past is because queer media is now just included in mainstream media and just thought of as kind of like general human rights issues. Do you think that's true? Like, a lot of it has moved just to being accepted by the mainstream and is written about in sort of legacy media?
I think if we leave it to legacy media to tell our stories, then our stories won't be told well. Mm. There is more coverage, absolutely, mm-hmm. but it's sporadic. Mm. And it's not always, but often shallow in the sense that they'll take the story of the moment and the headline of the day, but will they delve more deeply? Will they ask the questions that we would ask? Would they reflect our community? Would they celebrate our stories? Would they celebrate our love in a deeper kind of way? Would they capture our voices in any kind of depth and challenge the stigma that still surrounds sex and sexuality and our sexuality in particular? I think legacy media has made progress. I mean, I've watched 16 years of coverage And the tone has certainly changed. It's far more celebratory than scandalized by, say, a gay male couple holding hands at Pride. You know, the whole tone of coverage has changed. But I don't think it's sufficient coverage. I think it's helpful to have non-scathing pieces in legacy media, but I don't think it's all of what we need. So I think Extra still has a place. I think some of the new media have done some really good journalism here and there. Mm-hmm. Like, there are a few people that I follow in particular at BuzzFeed, for example, and they've done some international coverage that has impressed me. Like when in South Korea, Pride organizers ran up against opponents. They were there on the ground, BuzzFeed, and that was terrific. But here at home, I think that Extra is still the place to go for consistent coverage, for the deeper looks, for the layers that we add and the sex that we destigmatize.
Totally. Yeah, so in terms of queer media in Vancouver, obviously Extra, like you're saying, are there any other publications, or do you just follow sort of certain authors, like with BuzzFeed, or certain citizen journalists, or are there any other sort of organizations or publications you look to for kind of Vancouver or Canada-centric queer coverage?
I'd say just specific authors and, you know, specific coverage to see what's done elsewhere.
Cool. One of the things that they also were talking about in that Canada Land interview on queer media was whether queer people today are more or less political. And I think that that's a question that's perhaps impossible to answer, but I wanted to hear your take on that.
I've been thinking about that because, yeah. You know, I think it's a fair question to ask, but I think the answer lies in privilege. Mm. And I don't throw that word around lightly. What I mean specifically is it's a privilege, it's a comfort level in life to not feel like you have to be political to fight for your space and actively carve space for your voice. So a lot of members of our community don't have the option to not be political, you know? If you're a trans person trying to get the Vancouver Police Department to stand in compliance with the Human Rights Tribunal ruling that instructed the department to treat trans people fairly on a number of different levels, if the police force is not yet fully in compliance with that ruling, which they're not, as we covered a few months ago, then how, as a trans person, could you be apolitical about that? And I'm not trans, so I don't mean to speak for trans people at all. All I mean is there are sometimes fewer options for apathy when space still needs to be carved.
Totally. And, yeah, it's interesting to talk about the role of police, which obviously has been a contentious issue with Pride, both in Toronto and here and elsewhere. I was looking up some of your articles online. I saw that there was a piece you wrote in, I think, 2003 on how the police were, had a booth at Pride, and they were actually, for the first time, trying to recruit queer individuals to join the force. And just kind of like how this relationship between like the queer community and the police has kind of changed and now is kind of at a head. Would you be able to comment on that sort of evolving relationship while you've been at Extra?
Well, one of my first beats when I first got here in 2001 was to take a closer look at the relationship between police and our community. And when I say relationship, I say that lightly, because it was more a question of challenging police on why they didn't respond to gay bashings appropriately, and why they weren't recruiting at Pride, and why queer people were so unlikely to call police if they needed help. And these were really important questions to ask. 3 months into my tenure here as staff reporter, a man was fatally gay bashed in Stanley Park. That's Aaron Webster, and I think we should all remember his name. And coming out of that horrible incident, we started to challenge police and the justice system on how gay bashings are seen by police, responded to by police, investigated by police, and then if they make it to court, how the justice system takes it on. And we basically found gaps at every step along that path. And we challenged all those gaps. And there has been progress. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, there's been progress. You know, I can point to changes made to the way police are taught to respond to gay bashings. Mm-hmm. And a memo from the Attorney General of BC in, I want to say, 2010, instructing Crown prosecutors to prosecute gay bashings differently, to seek evidence to present in court, to name it as such, and move through the justice system accordingly. So there has been progress, I think, specifically because our community has pressured for those changes. But now for me to hear from members of Black Lives Matter, who are predominantly queer in this city and elsewhere, to hear from them that the ways in which police treat them have not evolved. And that's eye-opening to me, because I'm among the people who had the privilege of holding police accountable when I first started here, and that I didn't, I guess, ask the right questions for all members of our community. Well, I'm certainly determined to ask those right questions now and to hold the police accountable now. And I think it's a completely fair question to look at a pride parade, for example, which is meant to be a celebration of our community, and ask why certain people or institutions are participating and being hailed while members of our own community feel excluded and feel silenced and pushed to the side. You know, to me, there's an imbalance there that I think it's an essential discussion to have around that imbalance and what to prioritize.
And yeah, so as Black Lives Matter held their own Pride March, and then there is still the regular Pride celebration happening, and for that one there will be police, right? And there was a petition to keep them in the parade. So, like, what do you feel about that? Do you see both sides of that, or do you feel like members of the queer community just aren't kind of hearing Black Lives Matter?
Well, it's my job to hear all parties and listen carefully to all voices in our community, and I feel like I have. So, you know, my personal opinion is that we should, as a community, hear each other, hear all of us. And when members of our community tell us very clearly that the progress that has been real for some segments of our community has not extended to them, and could we please all pause and address that together and prioritize getting that same progress or similar progress for other members of our community that should have been included in that progress and prioritized all along? For me personally, to me, that is what needs prioritization. Mm-hmm. And I think that other members of our community who worked very hard to build bridges to police.
Yeah.
Like Jim Diva, who's a community hero and, you know, co-owner of Little Sisters Bookstore.
Oh, yeah.
And he passed away a few years ago unexpectedly, which was a loss to all of us. And he, in particular, with others, worked very hard to build bridges to police. But I interviewed Jim many, many times over my years here. And I'm fairly confident to say that he built those bridges to teach police how to serve us better,
mm-hmm.
how to hear that it's a gay bashing, for example, and then how to respond appropriately, how to make space so that members of our community feel comfortable picking up the phone and calling for help to the institution that's there to serve and protect, and teaching that institution how to serve and protect appropriately. I think that those bridges were built for the purpose of serving our community members and not simply as an end in itself, you know? So I think that to simply push for inclusion of police without hearing how that's affecting different members of our community, I think that forgets some of the original purpose of reaching out to police in the first place.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, there's, I mean, I always find that there is this kind of inner turmoil with myself, and perhaps you feel this with these issues of
when someone is being oppressed or a group is being oppressed, that they have to take on the burden of educating the oppressor. And it's just, it seems like it's unavoidable, but it's just, it must be a very exhausting thing.
And that goes on several levels, right? Because it was our job to teach police how to serve us better, because we weren't going to get there without without our own intervention. At the same time, I feel like it shouldn't have been up to queer people of color to teach people like me, a white editor, how to hear them. I wish that I'd been listening all along.
I've gone through most of my questions. So, I mean, to wrap up, I would ask what you feel hopeful about for queer media in Vancouver and Canada in terms of Extra and other organizations.
I can speak for Extra. I would say I'm hopeful, and with good reason, that we are going to continue to tell our queer stories, continue to celebrate our lives, and help make that space for us to live freely and unapologetically and our full selves, and to set love and lust free, and to capture more accurately a fuller, more complete picture of who we are as community, an inclusive picture that celebrates far more members and hears more stories and just understands the many, many ways to be queer.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Robin.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Happy Pride.
Yeah, happy Pride. That wraps up the interview. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please visit dailyextra.com or citr.ca for more information. And to contact me directly, please email spokenword@citr.ca. Thank you.